When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is the Banks of the Raritan podcast, presented by the Fans First Sports Network.
Rutgers Nation, what's going on? Welcome back to another episode of the Banks of the Raritan podcast, where we talk all things Rutgers athletics, specifically Rutgers football right now. This is Matt Forno speaking, riding solo again. My co-host Greg and I both kind of have separate schedules right now. Myself, I just started a new job, and he's been working pretty late. So just trying to pump out some podcasts for you guys, despite some scheduling conflicts. But without further ado, let's dive into it. Before we obviously get into recapping Ohio State and previewing Iowa, we got to talk about Rutgers athletics because hoops is back. Rutgers basketball, men's and women's, is back. I was courtside at the Jersey Jam down in Trenton, New Jersey, for the Rutgers loss, unfortunately, to Princeton. The game was fun. Obviously, we would have loved for a better outcome. But if you're a Rutgers fan, a Princeton fan, you absolutely hated this game being in Trenton, specifically at the Cure Insurance Arena. Parking was a nightmare. I pull into the parking lot. Parking's $20. I had a 10 and 9 singles. The guy didn't even count it, so I knew it was going to be a mistake from the beginning. Got lucky there, but certainly karma came back to bite me in the ass, and I couldn't find parking, as well as maybe 100 people behind me. I ended up parking pretty much on a curb like so many others. People were late into the game. People were not happy. Bad juju. I'm going to credit that to the loss for the Knights, but you know, we'll talk a little bit about Rutgers basketball a little bit more, but the women, on the other hand, won their first game at the rack against Monmouth, so credit to them. Let's keep it rolling. Wrestling took down both Duke and Cal Poly in dominant fashion, so let's keep chopping there on the mat. But also, women's volleyball, despite losing to number one Nebraska, they broke a program, or they set a program record, with over 6,700 people at Jersey Mike's Arena. I think this was on Sunday. I'm forgetting exactly what day it was. It was either Sunday or Saturday, which is incredible. And just a reminder that we, as Rutgers fans, as Rutgers student-athletes, as a university, belong in the Big Ten. All of our athletic programs are being competitive, and when you have 6,700 people showing up for a women's volleyball game against the number one team in the country, you know people are paying attention, and I know you are too if you're listening to this podcast, so let's keep it rolling. Now, to go back to men's basketball, I obviously ranted a little bit about the parking situation, all of that. It was a nightmare. Obviously, we would have loved for the game to have gone better, but just, you know, I don't like making excuses, but this was a Princeton team that did make it to the Sweet 16 and played very well, I believe, against Creighton it was in that Sweet 16 game. Look, Princeton's good. They returned a lot of, I think, 6 rotation players. They were just a team, when you watch them playing, knew how to play with each other better than Rutgers, who's replacing a lot of players, a lot of new faces that we're seeing, and that really seemed to be the deciding factor. But where I was most disappointed was Rutgers was simply out-hustled for the most part. They didn't rebound well. They weren't crashing the boards. Just seemed like if there was a loose ball, Princeton was always, you know, ending up with it. But there were some positives, I thought. I thought Antoine Wolfork played tremendous. I would have loved to have seen Cliff, but I thought he played well. He seemed improved in the post, around the rim, making shots, which was encouraging. It was clearly a team that needs to play more games to get better. But I'm still happy. I still love this team. And whether or not this year is a success or not, I know fans are mostly excited about the future for this program. And we know Steve Pyko is going to keep pounding nails and get us to where we need to go. So that was our Rutgers Athletics recap. And now we can kind of go back in time to Saturday and talk about the Ohio State game. I was there tailgating, did the whole shabam. I truly believe that was one of, if not the best game day experiences of definitely the Greg Schiano era. Obviously, you had the Nebraska game last year, but that was a dud. That was one of the most frustrating games I ever been to. But you take away that game, and I really think with it being a nationally televised game against the number one team in the country, obviously you had a lot of Buckeye fans at the game, but Rutgers Nation showed out, and so did the team, so did the coaching staff, everybody. And it was just an incredible, incredible experience from beginning tailgating, going to the Scarlet Walk, getting into the game. Everything was super fun. And the game itself, I thought, was extremely entertaining. Clearly, things didn't go our way, and we'll get into the good and the bad. But the environment and just the idea of what Rutgers can be, I think, was on front stage for that one, because Greg Schiano isn't lying when he's saying we're not there yet, but we're certainly getting there. And I think this game was a really great checkpoint in that mission that Greg Schiano set forth. Now, let's quickly talk Ohio State. Now, let's talk about the bat. We all know we lost the game. If you look at the box score, not the box score, really just the score, you think, Ohio State took care of them. I don't think that tells the story, but we'll get into all of that, but I do want to talk. Well, we could talk about it. The final score being 35-16. I think the game started out really well for Rutgers, forcing a three and out. And then obviously Rutgers goes, I don't know if they go three and out or not. I don't know even know if Ohio State went three and out. I can't remember, but they punted, we punted, and then they ultimately went down the field on a short field. It was about, they had to go half the distance of the field. With a touchdown pass to G. Scott from 14 yards out. A beautiful thrown ball by Kyle McCord. But from there, I was like, damn, like, we haven't Kyle McCord, people give him a lot of crap. They really do. I still think he's a good quarterback. This is just, he's not C.J. Stroud. He's not Justin Fields. He's not J.T. Barrett yet. He's still a young kid. This is true sophomore. So I think he gets a lot of the blame. But I still think Ohio State is a very, very capable team and deserving to be number one. Regardless, you know, that first drive, I was like, damn, it was fun. Like, what's going on now? How are we going to respond? And how does Rutgers respond? They go down the field and they kick a field goal. Well, the first quarter was back and forth from there. But then in the second quarter, Rutgers dominated. Rutgers completely dominated the second quarter. Jay Patel with three field goals from 22, 21, and 20 yards. He hit the trifecta of the 20-yard field goals. But, of course, the play of the day, Yeah, it was the first half. Kyle Manungai's Rutgers Ruski, as people are calling it, the fumble Ruski play on fourth and one that ultimately set Rutgers up. I think it was for that first field goal. I'm sorry that I'm forgetting it, but that was so exciting. But I was calling that the play of the day, but really what I thought was the play of the day was Mohamed Terrey's interception that, again, set up Rutgers to take the lead at the end of the second quarter. So it was an exciting game. Obviously, the third quarter, the way things started out with that pick six, didn't go great. Put a small taste in my mouth. And you think, oh, crap, here's the avalanche. Here's when Ohio State becomes the beast and they take over the game. And I think that was because of how games have went in previous years. In previous years, as soon as Rutgers faces a little bit of adversity, the score just piles and it gets out of reach. But this has happened in the three losses right now where Rutgers has had a pick six. And I still think that they've responded well with that adversity, specifically in this game. It happened in Michigan, obviously. It happened in Wisconsin. And it happened in Ohio State. And I think in each of those three games, they responded to the adversity by still chopping for 60 minutes, which is really all I'm looking for against these better teams. Not going to say Wisconsin's necessarily better. I think that was a game Rutgers lost. It was probably their worst game of the year. But Rutgers fought. Rutgers kept going. The defense kept playing. We obviously get on the scoreboard. We make it a 21-16 game at one point. And then, of course, Marvin Harrison just took over on the goal line for the Buckeyes, scoring two touchdowns. But let's get into the good. Let's get into the bad. But let's start with the bad. And obviously, number one, you know, I talked a lot about the three field goals in the second quarter. All of those opportunities could have resulted in 6 points or, you know, 7 points if we get the extra point. They were right there to score, and they just couldn't get in to the end zone. So the red zone opportunities were just bad. It's just not good where you can't, when the field shrinks, you got to get into the end zone. You can't kick field goals against teams like Ohio State and expect them to beat them. And that obviously led to the reason why we lost. But that kind of goes hand in hand with the other 2 points that I have. And number two was Gavin's accuracy. I mean, right now he's statistically the least accurate quarterback in the country. I'm not giving up on him. I don't think you should too either. I still think he does so much good for Rutgers, despite the really bad accuracy numbers. I can't get much worse, under 50%. But then we have that pick six as my number 3 point for the bad. And I mentioned it before, the pick sixes in all three of the Rutgers losses this year, the pick six that has happened has been the deciding factor of those games. Obviously, Rutgers fought against Ohio State, and in Michigan, it was a little late. They didn't have a chance to come back. In Wisconsin, it put them in such a hole where it was so hard to come back from, and that's kind of what happened here. You know, allowing a 290-plus yard at pick sixes is just a gut punch to the team, and that's just disappointing. So hopefully, as we talk about Iowa coming up, that we can clean those mistakes up, convert in the end zone, and limit those interceptions and turnovers. But let's talk about the good. And of course, we have to talk about Kyle Manungai. I mean, he is such a delight. He's unbelievable. An under-recruited guy coming out of high school under the shadow of 4-star number one player in Jersey, Jalen Berger, who ends up going to Wisconsin and now is at Michigan State. Finally, he's in the limelight. He's leading the Big Ten in rushing, less than 100 yards away from 1,000 yards. I think he would be the first 1,000-yard rusher. Oh, man, I don't even know. I want to say Paul James, or I think Desmond Peoples maybe was his name. I'm not exactly sure. Apologies. But he's 149 yards against Ohio State, one of the best defenses in the country. Just gives you reason for optimism for these next three games that Rutgers is going to be having. And he can't get enough credit. He deserves it all. He actually deserves more credit than he's been given. But moving forward, I want to talk about, obviously, the defense. I mentioned Muhammad Ture, but him and Deion Jennings, without Tyreem Powell, show you why the linebacker core of this team is so good. They are phenomenal players. Now, Muhammad Ture, I always get nervous seeing him in coverage, but when he comes away with that great pick six at the end of the first half, it makes me want to, like, bite my tongue and be like, keep him in coverage. Obviously, that touchdown against G. Scott was with him in coverage, but truly a great catch and even better throw by Kyle McCord. So I'm not going to blame him for that. But him and Jennings from the linebacker position have just been playing tremendously, and they give me a lot of hope with these final three games coming up on the schedule. I also want to give a shout-out to Isaiah Eiton filling in for Maya Ahatanu. I always forget how to say his name. I didn't realize our starting defensive tackle was out for this one. But Eiton came in, the transfer from Ole Miss, and truly played phenomenally against a very good, obviously, Ohio State offensive line. He played great, and so did the rest of the defense. But I thought one of the bright spots of this team, despite allowing 2 yards, 2 touchdowns to Marvin Harrison, the fact that the team only held him to 25 yards receiving was tremendous. I mean, you look at the defense, and if you take Travion Henderson was dealing with an injury bug like he has in previous years and earlier on in this season, I'm not sure Ohio State wins this game. I mean, he was their entire offense. He had 122 carries, 128 yards, and a touchdown. And then receiving, he had 5 receptions for 80 yards. I mean, he was their leading receiver by almost 50 yards. Carnell Tate was their second leading receiver with 2 catches for 31 yards. You have Emeka Abuka with 4 catches for 29 yards. Marvin Harrison, 4 catches for 25 yards. I mean, this is one of the best, if not the best, receiving corps in the country. And Rutgers' pass defense, people weren't sure if they were going to be a hold up, and they certainly did. I mean, this team, the defense is great. It really is, and it's why I have so much optimism to finish the year. But, I mean, they did a great job. And another shout-out I want to give is our time of possession. I mean, the way Rutgers is going to win games, I've talked about it all year for months. They're going to control the clock. They're going to limit turnovers. They're going to win the turnover battle. and they're going to play good defense and they're going to run the ball. If they do those four things, they have a good chance of winning. They had a time of possession of 35 minutes to 24 minutes versus Ohio State. That's tremendous. And that's why I think Rutgers was able to keep it so close, was because of the offense holding on to the ball. The best defense is an offense that controls the football, and that's exactly what Rutgers did, and it's why the defense was able to play so much better. So it was encouraging defensively. Another shout-out I got to give Jay Patel. Obviously, I mentioned he had those three field goals in the second quarter. It's great having a kicker we can rely on. Obviously, those were short field goals, but he's done a great job kicking field goals for us this year. I want to also give a special shout-out to his mom, who works with my good friend. I'll leave his name blank for now, but we got a picture with her before the game started, and she was just so excited. So I love seeing the Rutgers community rally around the football team, specifically their players. So it's always great. So shout-out to Mrs. Patel. One other shout-out, of course, is I got to give the coaching a shout-out. I mean, for Greg Schiano to call that fourth down player, for Kirk Sriracha to design it, such a gutsy play call. It was talked about. It was executed perfectly, and it went for way more than they probably ever expected. And I think that takes some balls as a coaching staff to call against a defense like Ohio State. But I just think defensively, when you see Joe Harris-Simiak, people being like, and this is just some nonsensical Twitter account that's saying USC should target Joe Harris-Simiak for their defensive coordinator job. I sure hope he doesn't do it. But for him to be considered or even spoken among taking that job, which would be one of probably the best jobs in the country, despite how terrible that defense has been, means that they would target a guy who's turned a defense around and made them a top 25 defense in the country. I think it's extremely encouraging. And I think Kirk Sriracha and also Pat Flaherty, the offensive line coach, have just done a tremendous job. I think the play calling obviously gives a lot. There's a lot more to desire. You want to see more exciting plays, but I don't think we have the cars in the garage yet to really go all at it. And obviously with Gavin missing on a lot of throws, specifically that throw to Christian Dremel, which would have been a touchdown, and some other throws, obviously leaving that ball up in the air on that pick six. He's shown he's got talent, and I think Kirk Sriracha, once he kind of gets what he wants, gets his personnel in there, I'm excited to see what this offense can be. But I'm just so encouraged by the coaching staff. And a bonus positive is, as a nationally televised game on Saturday, a noon kickoff, it was the fourth most watched game on Saturday, bringing in almost 4 million viewers. It outgained Clemson, Notre Dame, Bedlam, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, and a bunch of others. So obviously Ohio State's a national brand, a massive brand in college football. But I think what really allowed this game to be that fourth most watched game is Rutgers being up at half and making it a competitive game, a game worth watching. Previous years, that doesn't happen. I mean, nationally televised games, in my opinion, in the past, would make me feel nervous. I'd be, crap, people are going to watch this Chris Ash-led team come out here and lose 78-0 to Michigan. Those are my memories when it's a nationally televised game. So I'm happy that Rutgers was competitive, showed that they are a good football team, an improved football team. And I don't think, you know, people are always going to have that Rutgers biased and say negative things about us. But I think the way the team performed against Ohio State this past weekend was extremely encouraging, especially with that probably being our second or third hard. I have to say it's our first or second hardest game of the season. I don't want to disrespect Penn State just yet, but they do not have the type of offense that Ohio State or Michigan does. And I think Rutgers has done a nice job containing them. So let me just see if there's any other stats worth bringing up. I guess, you know, when you look at Gavin going 10 for 25 for 129 yards, that's not great. He obviously had that touchdown throw to Jaquay Jackson, and I thought Jaquay Jackson and Christian Dremel both had phenomenal games, despite only catching 5 passes for Dremel and 3 for Jaquay Jackson. But they've been our go-to guys all year. Ian Strong has been a guy I've wanted to see get more involved in the offense. He had a couple targets. He had a pass interference call that was he drew, which allowed a drive to continue. So it's just been a lot, I think, to be proud of when it comes to this team and the way that they've improved. But offensively, obviously, there's still more to be improved. But like I mentioned, Deion Jennings, 7 tackles. Mohamed Touré, 4 tackles. You know, those are the guys you want to be your leading tackles. And every time Mohamed Touré has a hit, I swear, you think the guy's every bone in his body he thinks broken. I mean, he hits so hard and he hits so well. It's not like dirty hits or leaning with his head. He's just doing a tremendous job. He's a great football player, and I love watching him. But let's look at Ohio State real quickly. I mean, I already talked about it. Like they limited them. They limited them. They weren't able to get comfortable. And I mean, I can't believe I didn't shout out the offensive line. I mean, the offensive line is unbelievable. Everybody was worried that this unit wasn't going to be good. How are we going to develop when we have to play against these top 10 defenses in the Big Ten? I mean, to be able to rush the ball 43 times for 232 yards against an Ohio State team, that's the most that any team has ever rushed against them this season. So encouraging, and obviously you got to give credit to the big boys up front. Kyle Manungai does a great job breaking tackles and extending plays, but if it's not for the offensive linemen, you don't have an offense. So I'm so happy with the way Holland Pierce has been playing at the left tackle position, and I really hope we get to see him. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure what his eligibility is, but he's just a guy that – just a great underdog story from coming out of high school, not playing football, being like 460 pounds as a freshman, and now he's arguably one of the best left tackles in the conference. I mean, he's playing like it, and the offensive line has been outstanding. So they're such an X factor for this team, and I'm excited to see how they play. But with that being said, this is going to be a challenge this upcoming game against Iowa, the Hawkeyes, and Kinnick Stadium in Iowa City. It's not an easy place to play. It's one of the best home field advantages in the country. We haven't fared well there. I think we've only – how many times have we played there? Probably like twice, I think. But it's a tough place to play, and Iowa is another team. And this is from Greg Schiano. He said that if he didn't leave to go to the NFL – he would envision that the program, the identity that they would kind of have, would be similar to Iowa. He kind of views them as a team that would be in the Iowa category as a team. And I don't think he's wrong, because, I mean, let's look at similarities right now. Bad offense, really great defense, play good special teams. Like, that's the Rutgers, that's the Greg Schiano recipe. I do think Rutgers offense, and we'll get into some stats, is definitely better than Iowa. But I don't want to look at anything and be like, you know, you look at the stats, you think fans are like, this is a game Rutgers can win. This is a game Rutgers can win. And I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I just don't want it to be like, well, we played Ohio State really well. We should beat Iowa. Like, we've done that so many times before, and it's never ended up well for Rutgers. I mean, every fan thought we were going to take care of Michigan State, and that game was a nightmare for the majority of the game. And if it wasn't for some miracles, who knows where Rutgers would be right now. But I do think Rutgers is playing better football than Iowa. And let's look at some statistics. Actually, before we look at some statistics, Iowa played Northwestern this past weekend at Wrigley Field. There was no scoring in this game until 9 minutes in the third quarter. And then it was a tie game until Iowa, and then Northwestern scored as well with 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter, making it a 7-7 game. And then Iowa kicks a game-winning field goal to win the game. Final score, 10-7. So Iowa rushed the ball for 41 times for 104 yards. This is against Northwestern. They had 65 passing yards. They were sacked twice. Deacon Hill was his name, I think. He went 10 for 15, 65 yards, one touchdown and an interception. And the time of possession between the two teams was nearly identical. It was 30 minutes to 29 minutes. So virtually had the ball for the same time. It was how many times did they punt? There were 14 punts in this game. Iowa punted six times. I don't even know how that makes sense if there was so little scoring. But there was six punts, and then for Iowa, eight punts for Northwestern. So a pretty terrible football game, a classic Big Ten West football game. But I just look at that game, and I know that I said it, we shouldn't do this, but Northwestern and is a team that is playing much better than when they faced Rutgers, and they have way more. I think they're at four wins right now. They have wins over Maryland. I'm forgetting who else. Maybe Nebraska? I can't remember. But the fact that they have four wins is extremely encouraging for them, in my opinion. But this is a team that – did they outgain them? Let's see. No. Passing yards. It was about – oh, wow. It was literally about even. They played like the same game. They rushed the ball the same amount of times. That's funny. I'm just looking at the stats. Excuse me. But, I mean, this is a team that obviously Iowa has a good defense. That's definitely true. They have a very good defense. And I have a stat for you. There are three football teams, FBS teams, that have allowed 10 offensive touchdowns or less. Iowa, Michigan, and Ohio State. Only one of them has been on the field for 600-plus defensive snaps, and that's Iowa. They've been on the field for 663 snaps, which is the 11th most in college football. So, obviously, part of that reason is because their offense is so damn terrible that their defense is going to be on the field for so much. But why I kind of like this is I think that if Rutgers, a defense is going to break at some point. Now, in Iowa's case, their defense typically leads to their special teams making a punt return touchdown with, I'm forgetting his name. Let's see if I can see it. What's his name? Connor DeJean, right? Is that his name? Connor DeJean? Cooper DeJean. I mean, he's just able to take over a game. He plays like safety, corner, and he does their punt returns, and he's won them games because of that. So this is a team where obviously we want our offense to be on the field, but it's like Iowa just, you know, the longer their offense is less on the field, the more likely they like turn possessions into points defensively or on special teams. But I just think that this is a game where Rutgers statistically is better. The defense, you can argue, is better. We'll review some statistics, and the offense, without question, is better. So let's look at it from this. Let's look at it from this perspective. Offensively, Rutgers is 8th in the Big Ten, averaging 330 yards per game. Iowa is dead last by almost 70 yards. They average 225 yards per game. Scoring wise, Rutgers is 5th in the Big Ten, scoring 26.8 points per game. Iowa is 13th. Scoring 18.4 points per game. When we look at the defense, though, Rutgers is 4th in the Big Ten, allowing only 282 yards per game, while Iowa average is 5th, so right behind Rutgers, averaging 297 yards per game. When it comes to scoring, Iowa is ahead of Rutgers at 4, allowing 13.7 points per game, while Rutgers is 5, allowing 17.9 points per game. I do want to point out that I truly think that probably the only good team that Iowa has played has been Penn State in Happy Valley, where they lost, I think, 31-0. Aside from that, who has Iowa played? Let's look at who Iowa's played. Obviously, they played Northwestern, but they played Utah State. They scored 24 points. Iowa State, they scored 20. They throttled Western Michigan. They scored 41. They put up a goose egg against Penn State. 26 against Michigan State, 20 against Purdue, 15 against Wisconsin, 10 against Minnesota, and 10 against Northwestern. It's important to realize that I believe during the Michigan State game, Cade McNamara got hurt, and you can quickly see after that, the offense really started to fall off. They haven't scored more than 20 points since the end of September. So this is an offense that's downward trending, and I think that's important for Rutgers to point out. But clearly the defense is good. But like I mentioned, they played Northwestern, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Purdue. Like, their Big Ten West is so, so bad. But when you look at the teams that they played outside of that conference, I mean, Michigan State scored 16 points. Penn State scored 31. That's more than Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Northwestern. So I think there's a path for Rutgers. I certainly do. And I just think that Rutgers is playing better football right now. It sucks that it's on the road, but you know, Rutgers performed well, I think, at the Big House when they played Michigan. They played like crap, in my opinion, on the road against Wisconsin. But you know, they obviously played well on the road against Indiana. This is gonna be a tough environment, but I think Rutgers, regardless of the environment that they're in, if they're able to run the ball, control the clock, protect the ball, and play good defense, it's going to be a game where I think Rutgers is going to win. And I do predict Rutgers winning this game. Let's try to think of a score right now. I don't know what the over-under is. Let's see. Maybe I can find it. So Rutgers is currently a point and a half under, one and a half point underdogs, and the over-under is at 28.5. So they're predicting this game probably is going to be, we're going to call it, 17-10, something like that. I just think that I don't know how Iowa is able to generate more points than they have in previous matchups. So, I mean, you look at the total, I definitely could see this game going under. It's kind of like I kind of want to be a part of history and say I bet the under at 28.5. I mean, it's -115 in the under, and it's if you want it the over, it's -105. So you're getting better odds betting the over, which is insane because you have to score, let's just call it 4 touchdowns to cast the over, which some teams can do by themselves in the first quarter of games. But I do think this is a game that Rutgers is going to win. And looking at the total, I definitely think Rutgers gets in the end zone at least once. Jay Patel has kicked some good field goals. I want to say he makes at least 2 field goals. And I let's think. So that would give us 13 points. I think they win. I think this game can be 13-6 Rutgers, realistically. That's going to be my prediction. 13-6. The under hits. Rutgers gets their 7th win of the year, 7-3. And then with Iowa being ranked, this would be our first ranked win in who knows how long. I don't have it in front of me. And I think what that would allow Rutgers to do is for the first time since 2012, I believe, see themselves ranked in the AP poll, maybe the college football playoff poll. Who knows? But I think this is going to be a game where Rutgers wins and they have a bunch of momentum going on the road and a top 25 matchup in Happy Valley at Beaver Stadium against Penn State and the Nittany Lions. Should be a fun. We'll talk about that one next week, obviously. But look, fans, it's been an exciting season. We're playing with house money right now. And I think the way the defense has been performing, the way Kyle Manungai has been rushing, the way the offensive line has been defending or blocking, if Gavin Wimsatt can protect that football, complete crucial third down passes, and pick up some yards with his legs, this is going to be a game Rutgers wins. And fans should be excited. Let's be excited. Let's chop for 60 minutes. Let's get loud, and let's have some fun on Saturday. And with that note, fans, I'm going to end it here. I hope you have a great rest of the week, and I can't wait to watch this game on Saturday. I hope you can too. Let's chop!